Why do we produce the IMC Radio News?
Because the chasm isn't left to right. It's top to bottom.
To give voice to people who aren't heard.
To bust up the myth of objective journalism.
Bill O'Reilly does not have a monopoly on the truth.
To build our community and re-educate the public.
To revive the voice of organized labor.
To bring forth debate so as to animate democracy.
Because I want to agitate for revolution.
Listen to the voices of your community on IMC Radio News.
This week on IMC Radio News, we'll have a live interview with Paul Riesmandel, a local expert on the many issues surrounding media democracy, and we'll hear his thoughts on the recent FCC re-regulation of media ownership rules. But first, these headlines, which were gathered by Kevin Heinrich and which Paul is here to help me read.
This story appeared on indymedia.org. June 3rd was Mabo Day, the anniversary of June 3rd, 1992, when the High Court of Australia rejected the notion of terra nullius, which states that Australia was not occupied before European colonization. Eddie Mabo, born on Mare in the Torres Strait and living in Townsville in Queensland, conducted a 10-year battle through the courts that led to this historic judgment. The Mabo judgment states in law that Indigenous Australians have, because of their prior occupation, ownership of land where native title has not been extinguished. This marked the beginning of a reconciliation process between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians that is based in law, not charity. It opened up a new chapter in the often difficult relationship between Indigenous and non-Indigenous Australians. It states Indigenous people have legal, not just symbolic rights, to all Crown land in Australia, as well as possible rights to pastoral leases.
The Chicago IMC reports that more than 100 protesters marched to Boeing's Chicago headquarters and the Israeli consulate Thursday evening, where they staged a dramatic reenactment of the Israelis' military's murder of International Solidarity Movement activist Rachel Corrie. Thursday's march and street theater was organized as part of an International Day of Action to oppose Israel's continuing occupation of the West Bank and Gaza Strip, which marked its 36th anniversary this week. The Chicago protest also highlighted the growing campaign to demand that Peoria-based Caterpillar Corporation stop selling bulldozers to the Israeli military, which uses Caterpillar equipment to destroy roads, wipe out olive trees, and demolish Palestinian homes. A Caterpillar export, the D9 armored bulldozer, was used to crush Rachel to death on March 16th as she tried to block the demolition of a Palestinian home near Rafah in the occupied Gaza Strip.
The following headline was taken from the United Kingdom IMC website. Over the course of several days, a delegation from Yabasta, an Italian activist organization, was repeatedly refused entry into Iraq. Timed to coincide with the G8 summit, the delegation was sent to establish links between elements of civil society in Iraq, Palestine, and Europe, including the Muwajaha newspaper, The Iraqi Witness. On June 1st, at 3:08 UK time, the UK IMC began receiving text messages from the delegation. Quote, they're going to shoot us. Need pressures. We are at the border, end quote. Despite being told that they would be shot if they didn't return to Jordan immediately, the activists courageously staged a sit-down protest. The American soldiers then violently dragged them onto the rear of a lorry, injuring 9.
A vigil for the animals is being held today and tomorrow at 3:50 and 6:50 p.m. at the Champaign County Fairgrounds, where Sterling and Ride Brothers Circus will be performing. The circus has violated the Animal Welfare Act more than 12 times and is considered one of the most cruel circuses out there. This circus repeatedly includes an animal freak show with a two-headed pig and a three-legged duck. Animal rights activists are encouraging compassionate sea residents to come out and participate in these silent and peaceful vigils against animal cruelty. Each vigil is expected to last about 20 minutes.
The following headline is from Global Indie Media. Several hundred protesters gathered at Bechtel Corporation headquarters in San Francisco at 7 a.m. Thursday and blockaded the entrances. The citizens targeted Bechtel for its billions of dollars in post-war reconstruction contracts. While over 100 police managed to open the building after a few hours, many Bechtel employees were told by their employer to take the day off.
And that wraps up headlines. When we come back, we will be talking to Paul about media ownership and its effects on our local media situation.
Shoulder and the touch of a world that is older. I turn the switch and
Welcome back. This is IMC Radio News. Paul Riesmandel is one of the core volunteers at our IMC and is the host of Media Geek, a show that airs here on WEFT Fridays at 5:30 p.m. and focuses on grassroots media and the issues that affect media democracy. Paul has joined me live here in the studio today to talk to us about the recent FCC decision. Welcome.
Thanks, Clint.
Okay, we're going to start off by getting your expert analysis and recap of sort of the guts of this decision. What are the new ownership rules, the cross-ownership things, how have they changed, that type of stuff?
Well, yeah, the new rules primarily deal with television and then its relationship to other media. So from the 1970s forward, there's been this rule called the cross-ownership rule, which kept television stations from being co-owned with newspapers and radio stations. And by and large, that's been eliminated in most markets. Now, there's a lot of places like Chicago where you currently have TV stations that are co-owned with newspapers, and that's because they pre-existed this rule and were grandfathered in. Mm-hmm. Also, in some cases, some waivers have been granted by the FCC, such as in the case of Rupert Murdoch, who owns newspapers and television stations in New York. And in fact, he owns two television stations in addition to one radio station, and that's actually a result of a very recent waiver. But what's happened here is that the FCC has more globally rescinded this rule, and has also rescinded the rule which prevented called duopolies, which was one company was prevented from owning two TV stations in a given market. And as I mentioned before, there are waivers to this that have been given in many different circumstances, but what this does is it makes it much more across the board in many different places. And the big change here in this, in addition to sort of taking away these restrictions, has been the way in which the FCC is going to make determinations on whether it will allow cross-ownership or whether it will allow duopoly. And what they've done is they've changed all the metrics. And now they're going to be relying primarily on either the number of TV stations or the ratings of these TV stations in combination with the numbers.
Okay.
So instead of saying that there cannot be any duopolies, the FCC is now saying that if there are five or more stations, there cannot be a duopoly amongst the top four rated TV stations.
And how often are they rated? I mean, is this on a continual basis that if something changes?
This has not been clarified, but this is assuming probably the Nielsen television ratings, which mm-hmm. are done market by market. In the large markets, they're done on a very regular basis. In small markets like Champaign-Urbana, I think it's quarterly or semi-annually. Mm-hmm. So based upon that metric, the top four stations cannot be, none of those can be co-owned. Number one and number three can have the same owner on down. But any of the stations outside the top four could be co-owned or co-owned in with the top four stations. Mm-hmm. So you could have number one and number five, number two and number six, or number five and six could be co-owned.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a new metric, and it's really a whole new way of looking at things for the FCC to be taking direct account of ratings as opposed to just numbers of stations.
Mm-hmm.
And also then, those same sort of metrics go into account when the FCC is going to consider whether or not a TV station and a newspaper could be co-owned, which is really the one that raised the most amount of protest, and so-called the cross-ownership. And so, in only in a few markets in the country will cross-ownership be completely unpermitted.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where there are three or fewer TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have three or fewer TV stations in your market, there cannot be cross-ownership. Above that, there may be cross-ownership, and it sort of gradiates.
Mm-hmm.
So with between four and eight TV stations in a market, one company can own a daily newspaper, one TV station, and up to half the radio station limit.
Mm-hmm.
So the normal radio station limit would be somewhere in the neighborhood of four to eight stations, and so the one company mm-hmm. can own half that in addition to the TV station and the newspaper. If they have two TV stations, then they can't own a newspaper, but they can have up to the radio station limit.
Is there a very complex computer program that spits out the answer of what you can own?
Well, right. So, I mean, you can see that there's these various, you know, either-or situations, these metrics, mm-hmm. all based on the number of TV stations or the ratings of these TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
And then, again, these are other things which are otherwise prohibited, except when the FCC gave a waiver. So a lot more consideration would be given to a waiver, and here it's more a matter of plug in the numbers and see what comes out.
So probably a question that is most important for us to try to answer, which can't be answered on Global Newscast, is what does it all mean for us in our local market in Champaign-Urbana for radio, TV, and print and such things?
Well, it's a very interesting question for our local market because we have a very strange local market. Our local market, in terms of television, is considered to be Champaign, Urbana, Decatur, and Springfield. Mm-hmm. And end-to-end, that's way over 100 miles, which means that UHF stations in Urbana are not receivable in Springfield and vice versa. So we have this situation where not everyone can see the stations except via cable television.
How is this determined to be the market? Is that a FCC decision on what constitutes a market?
That's what Nielsen considers the market to be, and therefore what the FCC considers it to be. I don't know the history of market considerations in television, mm-hmm. but I do know that's it comes more from the economic side, from mm-hmm. the side of advertising.
Yeah.
And because of the nature of this, we already have three duopolies that the FCC has granted waivers for. So we have our local NBC affiliate 15 has a sister station in Springfield, Channel 20. Channel 3 has a sister station in Springfield, 49. And 27 is a sister station in Channel 55 in Springfield.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, they have the same programming, right? So it's Fox, CBS, and NBC. And in terms of primetime programming, they have the same thing. And, mm-hmm. and the rationale is that, you know, that Channel 20 can't really serve Champaign-Urbana, especially over the air signal, so mm-hmm. it makes sense to have this other local signal. So they've been grandfathered in, or actually given waivers to exist. An interesting wrinkle in that is that Channel 49 in Springfield, which used to just rebroadcast a Channel 3 signal, recently flipped over to the UPN.
Mm-hmm.
And so they now actually broadcast a different signal. Under the new metrics, though, a duopoly is permitted in Champaign-Urbana.
Mm-hmm.
But a triopoly is not, and that's where three stations could be owned. So I'm not sure how the FCC considers these two station situations that currently exist, like mm-hmm. Channel 3 and 49 or 15 and 20, whether or not they consider that to be one station or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure the FCC could answer that question for you at the moment. They'd have to go through some machinations. So it may be that those three companies, Sinclair, Nexstar, and Urbana Broadcasting Partners or something, which owns Channel 27, might not be able to get any bigger in terms of TV mm-hmm. in this market. However, Lynn Television, which owns Channel 17 and Decatur, the ABC affiliate, they could get bigger.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like they could take on a second station somehow. Very little is left. There's Channel 23 in Decatur,
mm-hmm.
and there may be another. There's a UHF affiliate in Springfield.
But what about cross ownership possibilities?
Cross ownership, it's all a go.
Mm-hmm. So
all these companies, it's fair game for them to get into newspapers, or for the newspaper companies to get into television.
Mm-hmm.
The likelihood of cross-ownership in Champaign-Urbana is probably lower than it is in terms of newspapers in either Decatur or Springfield. And that has to do with the fact that the News Gazette is independently owned.
Mm-hmm.
The publisher passed away at the end of the year, and she placed the News Gazette into a trust, with the terms being that it's not to be sold up to a bigger company.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't stop the News Gazette from buying a TV station.
So whatever I feel about the News Gazette's coverage of events, I have to at least appreciate that they're independent.
They've been very independent, and I guess spurned a lot of offers from the outside to stay independent. Mm-hmm. You'll also note the News Gazette owns two radio stations mm-hmm. in town.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. There was a lot of run-up to this decision, and what's curious to me is that the decision seems to have been a done deal in terms of the vote from the very beginning, and everyone knew it. Was there any chance that this decision to re-regulate wouldn't go through?
I doubt it. I mean, I'm certain that almost all FCC decisions are pretty much done before they come forward. This isn't the House of Representatives, and right. It's not the Senate.
And what is the politics of this? How does that function? Is it where are the power lines drawn? These are all appointees, correct?
They're all appointees. There's five FCC commissioners appointed by the president and then ratified by the Congress. There's the majority. Three come from the party in power, two come from the executive power, and two from the opposing party. So three Republicans and two Democrats.
So we did happen to get two really vocal and quite eloquent Democrats.
As it turns out, I think Adelstein was pissed because mm-hmm. his nomination was held up for a long time in the Senate as retribution for the Democrats in the Senate holding up some judicial nominees from Bush. So he was nominated way long ago last year, and only at the end of the year did he actually get onto the FCC.
Mm-hmm. But they both made quite a number of really remarkable statements that I wouldn't have expected, and we'll hear some of those at the end of the program. Another question as a background is what is the history of this type of regulation? There was the 96 Telecom Act. How has this all played out? Is this been dramatically increasing in the past 10, 20 years, or is it something that's been burgeoning since the beginning of telecommunications?
Most of these ownership regs were put in place in the 60s and 70s in response, sort of the tenor of the times in many ways, mm-hmm. in response to the growing number of media outlets, but then noticing there was concentration coming along with it. The dismantling of it is sort of happened from the Reagan administration on. But really, I mean, hit a peak in the Clinton administration, mm-hmm. in a Democratic administration. And really, the high watermark for this is this Telecommunications Act of 1996. The FCC didn't used to have to always relook at its regulations over and over and over again. But right now, since 96, has had to look at them biannually.
Okay, so that's a requirement of
that's
the law.
That's a requirement of law placed by Congress and the president.
Okay, were there other factors driving this particular review? Have there been things dramatically changing that people have said, wow, we really need a review right now? Or is it just because of the 96?
Yeah, I mean, yes, there's that. There's political pressure, of mm-hmm. course. There's the omnipresent pressure of the industry, mm-hmm. which the FCC works very close with. And the rules on television and cross-ownership have recently been challenged in the courts. All FCC rules get challenged in the courts in the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, which has been getting more and more conservative every year as more and more conservative justices get appointed to it. And they've been challenging the FCC's rules, saying that their metrics are arbitrary. Mm-hmm. I think the rule on duopolies was the 8-station rule. Mm-hmm. There have to be 8 separately owned or big media or something like that. And they challenged the metrics. Mm-hmm. And so the FCC went back and rewrote it. But as Adelstein has pointed out, who's on the FCC, we could have found a metric that would have maintained the status quo or even made it more strict. We just mm-hmm. had to do a better job of justifying it. Mm-hmm. But yes, a lot of these rules have been come up and been challenged in courts, and the Court of Appeals has been sending them back to the FCC saying, you'd better do a better job. And so that presages this set of rules review.
Do you think that that judging the possibility of duopolies based on ratings is a more realistic approach to doing this, or is it very directly just an influence of just a way to make it easier?
I mean, it's difficult to say. It's difficult to say because it's difficult to know what the results are going to be, mm-hmm. right? I'd have to look at a lot of data to see what kind of difference it's going to make. I think far more important is the cross-ownership elimination. Mm-hmm. The elimination of the cross-ownership rule has the likelihood of making much more difference. The broadcaster have been bashing away on the FCC over the duopoly rule for many years. Mm-hmm. Sinclair Communications, which owns Channel 15 locally, mm-hmm. has been challenging the FCC left and right in court on that, and winning some cases, or at least getting some movement on it. And there's all sorts of underground ways to have a duopoly. Mm-hmm. Local marketing agreements, where one station basically runs another one, even though some other company owns it. Mm-hmm. You know, even takes all the marketing money, basically. So mm-hmm. it's been a real spongy sort of definition to begin with. So it's not a matter of better or worse, I think. It's different and allows for other possibilities, but it's hard to gauge.
There was quite a lengthy public comment section of this, and I was actually surprised by the amount of just grassroots uprising to attend to those things, the amount of comments that were broadcast, at least over independent media and over alternative media sources. Was that surprising to you, or has this been a growing thing?
It's been a growing thing, but yeah, I was surprised, and I was glad. But what's amazing is that it's far more public comment and far more press coverage than went to any of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which set this in motion. Mm-hmm. So the root cause 7 years ago received, by comparison, almost no coverage, very little popular coverage, and very little public comment. And most of the legislators who voted on it did not understand it. Mm-hmm. They just relied on what they were told it did by lobbyists and by some advisors. Very few of them really understood all provisions. It's an enormous piece of legislation. Mm-hmm. By comparison, yes. I mean, maybe because this is a much smaller set, far more public input. And I think that surprised everyone. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think surprise legislators, surprise the FCC.
Well, given that we didn't have the text beforehand and afterhand to really review, it's hard to say, but it is curious to me whether this affected the outcome, of whether text was rewritten to make it maybe a little more political, whether some of the initial expectations that would have, what would have come out of this review were softened a bit by the amount of public outcry over them?
Probably a little bit, though it's hard to know. I mean, mostly what you had to do is get the three Republicans to agree with each other, because mm-hmm. they knew they could go 3-2. They don't like to on the FCC. They like to show a united front if they can. Mm-hmm. But they knew they could go 3-2. And so there was some horse trading, but not nearly as much as you might expect.
There was one that was considered to possibly be a swing vote.
Is that correct? Yeah. Kevin Martin.
Yeah.
Who voted against the Republican majority earlier in the year on a telecom bill. Mm-hmm. And so people thought he might be more of a wild card, and turned up not really being so. And in fact, he was the one who really wanted to push the national TV ownership limit up. Mm-hmm. And Powell did not, the chair did not want to, and they agreed to do so in exchange for something else.
Okay. And so there is an upcoming conference you're attending. Is it this weekend? This coming weekend?
It's coming weekend, yes.
And this is the Allied Media Conference, which is sort of the other end of this spectrum from the Clear Channels of the world. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about it. It's kind of a positive note.
It is a real positive note. And actually, I had an interview with one of the organizers, Jen Angel, on my show last Friday. That archive will be at my website soon. But it's a gathering of independent media makers of all types from pretty much all over the continent who come together to do workshops. There's an exhibition all to exchange things. And it's sort of secular in that it's no particular bias. It's not, you know, it didn't even necessarily call itself progressive, but it's definitely radically independent. Mm-hmm. And it used to be called the Underground Publishing Conference. And there's people there who do film, who do radio, who do public access TV, and lots of people who do publishing. And what's cool is that the first day of the conference, or the Friday, they're doing a whole afternoon about media literacy. And they've invited educators from all different levels, primary, secondary, and university, from all over the state of Ohio are coming mm-hmm. to talk about media literacy and be exposed to all this independent media. And it's in cooperation with Bowling Green State University in Bowling Green, Ohio, which is their first real cooperation like that, an amazing mm-hmm. kind of thing, because it is a really radically independent bring together. And I think that this FCC decision is serving, if nothing else, it's serving to give everyone a wake-up call and to put some energy, real energy, in independent media, which has had a big surge in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. And will there be, so we can expect another, we'll have another biannual review, so there's still an opportunity with enough grassroots organization and enough political pressure to if there end up being negative effects of the duopoly changes, that they could be pulled back.
Well, and even our representatives have heard. On June 18th, the Senate Commerce Committee, which oversees the FCC's budget primarily, mm-hmm. will be having a hearing on a set of legislation to simply undo what the FCC just did.
Really?
Whether or not it's a hot topic, and this is where we'll really see if all the hot air that came out of Congress, anyone will put their money where their mouth is, mm-hmm. for real. But that there are several pieces of legislation in the House and Senate.
So the Congress can trump the FCC at any point? If it
Absolutely. They made the laws which set down what the FCC can right. do, provided it passes constitutional muster. I will note, though, I mean, these are some big movements, but they don't show any sign of wanting to really turn back the fundamental 1996 Telecom Act, which is going to make this thing repeat and repeat.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting. We're going to be ending with some comments from one of the commissioners along those lines about the possibilities for continuing these efforts. But that sort of wraps up how much time we have after I read my long outro. I want to point everyone to Paul's show, which is on Fridays at 5:30 p.m. here on WEF 90.1, and also MediaGeek.org.
Yeah. And there's archives online and news. And also, if you're interested in the Allied Media Conference, it's www.clamormagazine.org, and there's a link for it there.
And they recently visited us, is that true?
They were recently at the IMC back in April. Really, really cool folks. It's a great vibe. It's a great time. And it's really dirt cheap.
Yeah. That's one of the many ways you can get involved in independent media. This show is another one, of course. You can always, always, always volunteer to become a part of this show. And I've been on Paul's show, and Paul's been on my show, so now we're even, and I have to go back to his show. But anyway, thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Clint.
All right, so this is going to wrap up IMC Radio News for this week. Like I said, FCC Commissioner Michael Copps is one of the two dissenting commissioners on this vote, and he sees a sort of blossoming future for grassroots media, and we'll hear his comments as we leave you this evening. Thanks to Kevin Heidrich for coordinating headlines, and special thanks to Paul for coming in and talking with us. The coordination of the UCIMC Radio News is funded by the Funding Exchange's Paul Robeson Fund for Independent Media. If you'd like to get involved, drop us a line at radio@ucimc.org or call 344-8820 extension 1. No experience is necessary. Archives of this program are available on the IMC website, www.ucimc.org. Financial contributions are also welcome. You can send those checks to the UCIMC at 218 West Main Street, Urbana, Illinois, 61801. Those would go to help the Radio News, but would also go to help our ongoing campaign to try to find a permanent home for the IMC in Urbana, as our current one is definitely in jeopardy. And again, here is FCC Commissioner Michael Copps with the great Charles Mingus backing him up. Take care, and see you next week.
Some have characterized the fight against this seemingly preordained decision as quixotic and destined to defeat. But I think instead that we'll look back at this 3-2 vote as something of a Pyrrhic victory. This commission's drive to loosen the rules and its reluctance to share its proposals with the people before we voted awoke a sleeping giant. American citizens are standing up in never-before-seen numbers to reclaim their airwaves and to call on those who are entrusted to use them to serve the public interest. In these times when many issues divide us, groups from right to left, Republican and Democrat, concerned parents, creative artists, religious leaders, civil rights activists, labor organizations, have united to fight together on this issue. Senators and congressmen from both parties and from all parts of the country have called on the commission to reconsider. The media concentration debate will never be the same. The obscurity of this issue that many have relied upon in the past, where only a few dozen inside the Beltway lobbyists understood the issue, is gone forever. I believe, after traveling almost the length and breadth of this land, that our citizens want, deserve, and demand a renewed discussion of how their airwaves are being used and how to ensure that they are being used to serve the public interest. I urge my colleagues to heed their call. I want to thank the hundreds of thousands of people who have attended hearings, filed comments, written letters to the editor, gone on talk radio, and contacted the commission. You have made a difference. And if you stay the course now, the chances have improved, significantly improved, that we can yet settle this issue of who will control our media and for what purposes, and to resolve it in favor of airwaves of, by, and for the people of this great country. Oh, oh,